If we do this by the book, and we should always do it by the book, we would continue now with testimony, with additional testimony from members of the public, beginning first with persons who support the project, who support the application. Mr. Wadsworth, if you would please be seated. Will you state your name for the record, please?
John C. Wadsworth.
Mr. Wadsworth, what is your office address?
My office address is 1111 East 37th Street North, Wichita, Kansas.
And your post office address, sir?
P.O. Box 1065, Wichita, Kansas.
And you're here on behalf of a corporation or other business entity, I understand, and what is that?
I'm here on behalf of the Bakken Oil Express Rail Hub, which is located near Dickinson, North Dakota.
Mr. Wadsworth, as you heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Wadsworth, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may proceed.
My name is John C. Wadsworth, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and address the commissioners. I'm the Director of Engineering and Construction for the Bakken Oil Express Rail Hub, which is located near Dickinson, North Dakota, and is starting operations on November the 1st in 2 weeks. I would like to say that Bakken Oil Express does support this amended application, that we do believe it's a good application. Just a short minute of my history. I'm a mechanical engineering graduate of Wichita State University. I've been in the oil industry for 33 years in various roles. I've been a vice president of operations for many crude oil pipelines, which include the Bow River Pipeline, Mid-Saskatchewan Pipeline in Canada, the Wood River Pipeline, Minnesota Pipeline in the States, that all have significant crude oil terminals and gathering systems. I've also been the owner and operator of over 25 crude oil terminals and refined products terminals located throughout the U.S. and Mexico. BOE does, we believe that Bakken Oil Express Rail Hub that's in Dickinson, North Dakota, does provide an alternative to the destination facility that's been mentioned in the application here. We've reviewed the application and believe that there is a limited amount of information on our facility to present to the commissioners. I would like to submit an Exhibit 8, which is an overview of the Bakken Oil Express for the commission.
All right, Mr. Bender.
Well, the only concern, Your Honor, is we already have an Exhibit 8. I think, don't we?
No. We do not.
Okay, then I have no objection.
Mr. Sagsveen.
No objection.
Exhibit 8 is received.
I'd just like to say that the Bakken Oil Express Rail Hub is located near Dickinson in Eland, North Dakota, and that we started construction in November of last year and are starting up operations here November 1st in 2 weeks. We've been receiving crude oil into the facility for 3 weeks now, and the first unit train, rail unit train, is scheduled in on November the 1st to be loaded the first week of November. So we believe this terminal is a viable operation, and we support it with pipelines and trucking coming into this crude oil terminal in Eland. The terminal very easily could be expanded to support the applicant's movement of oil. We fully support the fact that North Dakota is producing a lot of oil, which is good for the United States, and that does need to get to markets. And the best way currently and probably for the near future is to do that through pipeline systems such as this and these crude-to-rail terminals that are being built in North Dakota and destination facilities being built in the South. The Dickinson site was selected based on, we believe, the limited impact to the public health and safety and the natural resources and protection of the environment when that selection process took place well over a year ago. Again, the Dickinson facility is operational, and we would welcome the fact that it could be expanded quickly and easily to support the applicant's need to move additional barrels to the markets. And we have had discussions with them on that. The amended application didn't have much information on our terminal, so I provided that in the document that was listed as Exhibit 8. We have two 90,000-barrel tanks, one 32,000-barrel tank. The eight truck bays where eight tanker trucks at a time can be unloaded. And we load one unit train within a 12-hour period. And a unit train is 100 cars of about 65,000 barrels total of oil. We do that through a 12-bay rack. The rail loading building is a 12-bay rack. I'd just like to say that we do support pipelines, that we do think that pipelines are good, and we do support this application. I would like to just say that the BOE terminal in Dickinson is currently in operation. We do think it provides an alternative to the proposed destination facility that's listed in the applicant's application. BOE's location does minimize adverse effects on the natural resources and the environment. And I thank you for the opportunity to present information on the BOE terminal.
Mr. Bender.
No questions.
Mr. Sagsby.
No questions.
Mr. Fong.
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Just a couple out of interest. So the phase one, when I look at the map of your exhibit, or schematic, I guess, that's the one that's already open. Is that correct?
That's opening November the 1st.
Yes, November 1, okay. And that'll have an up to 100,000 barrels oil per day?
Yes.
I noticed on the next page that follows that that drawing, it talks about first unit of train loaded and shipped October 31st. Is that expected to be shipped on that date? Is that the?
It was delayed one day.
Okay.
So the first unit train is scheduled to arrive on November the 1st and should be loaded on November the 2nd with shipment on
okay.
the 3rd.
The additional phases, the 2012 plans, which would that add 200,000 barrels capacity, or it total would be 200,000 barrels?
The phase two expansion would allow us to ship 200,000 barrels per day of crude oil out of that
total.
Facility.
Okay. And is that has that phase started already, or is it contingent on something else happening?
It's contingent on the shipper needs,
okay.
shipper requirements.
And then phase three is even more, it's a little further out there, a little more speculative, but is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that would bring total capacity to 500,000 barrels a day.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
Commissioner Kramer.
Well, maybe you were going to answer this. I kind of want to get a little more clarification. So, if you can load a unit train in 12 hours, and I've heard that a number of times from others, obviously you load two in 24, all things being perfect. The one. So, how many unit trains can you load at one time to get to 500?
Well, we would have multiple racks. Currently, with one rack, which we have today, we can load one unit train in 12 hours, everything being perfect, no bad order cars, no pumps failures, and everything working perfect weather, perfect railroad.
Tanks full.
Tanks have plenty of oil in them. And so you can load that. That's the goal. Everybody wants to load a unit train in 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Reality through the EOG Stanley facility is probably it's 14 to 16 hours okay. to load a unit train. But the hydraulics and the design of this facility actually pumps 9 hours of crude oil to load a full unit train.
Okay.
So we have 3 hours to move the train around and hook it up.
Sure. So now this is also the other factor in all this is that you always have 110 cars available or that there's always a train and the cars are on time and you're confident of all of that?
that's the variability in crude to rail is the railroad is somewhat predictable. Stanley has proven it's fairly predictable, and rail cars will be within one day of schedule.
Very good. Fascinating. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Cook.
Thank you for your testimony. The using Exhibit 4, I believe that is over there. Could you show me where that would be at? Your facility is out on that map? Your best guess, I guess?
Our facility is located just south of Interstate 94, right between Dickinson and South Hart. We're 2 miles south of the interstate, so I'm not too steady.
Okay, well, that gives me. So would it be fair to assume that in order for your facility to be fully used, there'd need to be an additional string of pipeline?
Yes, sir. This facility is designed currently just in phase one to handle up to 3 pipelines coming in. And today we have 1 pipeline being built. It'll be connected on November the 7th. But there's room for 3 pipelines currently to come into this facility in phase one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Bender?
No further questions.
Follow up, Mr. Sagsveen?
No questions.
Mr. Fawn?
No questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wadsworth.
Thank you.
Next in order, I don't understand that anyone else is present to speak in support of the application, and so next I would move down the line, or people who do not oppose the application but who have comments for the commissioner's information. Beginning first, please, with Mr. Heiser. Mr. Heiser, will you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Lynn Heiser.
And what is your office address, Mr. Heiser?
It is P.O. Box 7 of Medora, North Dakota, 58645.
And I assume your physical office is at the Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
It is.
Is that South Unit or North Unit?
It is in Medora, the South Medora. Unit, yep.
Of course. Yep. And obviously, Mr. Heiser, you're here on behalf of the National Park Service and specifically on behalf of the Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you can do the drill here. As you know, Mr. Heiser, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Heiser, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may proceed.
Well, again, my name is Lynn Heiser. I'm the facility manager at Theodore Roosevelt National Park, and today I'm here on behalf of the park, but also for Valerie Naylor, our superintendent, who could not be here. I brought with me a letter of concerns and information that she drafted up that I'm going to read for you. Your Honor, Commissioners, Congress created Theodore Roosevelt National Park in 1947 as a public park for the benefit and enjoyment of the people. Today, the park's North, South, and Elkhorn Ranch units include over 70,000 total acres, including close to 30,000 acres of land protected as wilderness. Statutory direction for park management is found under the NPS Organic Act, 16 U.S.C. Section 1 et sec, and 16 U.S.C. Section 241 through 247. Under Section 1 of the NPS Organic Act, Congress stated the purpose of the national parks is to conserve the scenery and the natural and historic objects and the wildlife therein, and to provide for the enjoyment of the same in such manner and by such means as will leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment for future generations. Theodore Roosevelt National Park reviewed preliminary plans for the Bakken Link pipeline in the fall of 2010 from McCain and Associates. the environmental consultants on this project. At that time, the proposed route of the pipeline was outside and just east of the boundary of Theodore Roosevelt National Park near the park's north unit and about 2 miles from the southeastern boundary of the park's south unit. At the time, we did not have specific concerns, but asked the consultant that the park be notified of any significant changes to the route. The park did not receive any updates, but we have recently learned that the proposed route of the pipeline may have been moved at least twice, with the latest maps dated September 20th of 2011 showing the pipeline to be within the boundary of the north unit of Theodore Roosevelt National Park. In discussions with the pipeline environmental consultants during the past few days, we believe that this is in error and have been assured the proposed pipeline route would be moved back to the location and outside of the north unit boundary. Theodore Roosevelt National Park is an exclusion area under the North Dakota Administrative Code 69-06-08-02. The park was not mentioned as an exclusion area in the original or amended application, nor is the park shown as such on the associated maps. Even if the pipeline is planned a few hundred feet outside of the park boundary, a portion of the corridor could still overlie the north unit of the national park. We strongly question the need to have any portion of the corridor within this critical exclusion area. We must ensure that the route of the pipeline remains fully outside the boundary of the park and that there is no disturbance to the park's resources and values should this pipeline be constructed. We request that the National Park be officially acknowledged in this planning process and that the application and maps be amended to show that the National Park is an exclusion area. We request that the entire pipeline corridor be moved east of the park's administrative boundary. In addition, the Bakken Link pipeline is now proposed to terminate at a rail facility near Freiburg, less than 2 miles from the park's south unit boundary. We have serious concerns about the Freiburg rail facility, including impacts on the park's viewshed, as well as heavy truck traffic, light pollution, noise, and dust. Keeping industrial activity as far away as possible from our treasured national park is essential so that we can preserve this special place for future generations. The National Park Service is participating in interagency scoping with the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Bureau of Indian Affairs in the preparation of an environmental assessment on this project. The environmental assessment is still in its very early stages, and we believe that the environmental assessment must include and analyze a range of reasonable alternatives as required by the National Environmental Policy Act. For example, alternatives could include such options as a pipeline corridor further to the east to exclude the national park and national grassland altogether, adjusting the pipeline corridor for other numerous avoidance areas in the Badlands, and terminating the pipeline at a rail facility further from the national park to prevent the need for construction of a Freiburg rail facility close to the south unit. Until these alternatives are fully analyzed, we won't know whether this project is compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources, or whether it will have adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota. Therefore, Theodore Roosevelt National Park does not support any waiver of procedures and time schedules relating to this project, because there are many unanswered questions and many issues that need to be resolved through a thorough planning process. We appreciate the opportunity to provide comments on this project. Theodore Roosevelt National Park will remain involved in all phases of project planning that it can to ensure that it fulfills its mandate as set out by Congress. And that's the conclusion of the letter, and I request that this letter, which is signed by Theodore Roosevelt National Park Superintendent Valerie Naylor, be a part of the official record of this meeting.
For the record, the original letter is marked Exhibit 9. Mr. Bender?
No objection to the letter being made a part of the record.
Mr. Sagsby?
No objections.
Exhibit 9 is received. Questions, Mr. Bender?
Mr. Heiser, I realize you didn't draft the letter, but will you answer a few questions
sure.
if you can?
Sure.
Great. First of all, you understand now that the route will be outside the park. Okay. But the Park Service still has concern about a portion of the park being in the corridor. Is that correct?
Yeah, I guess we wanted to just make certain that, you know, the corridor itself, you know, isn't there. But again, I think that changed since we had the information that created the drafting of this letter.
So the movement of the route may actually result in none of the park being in the corridor as well, if it's a 200-foot corridor.
Right.
Is that correct?
If it moves over, then that would, you know, get rid of that concern for us.
Okay, and the other concern, as I recall in your reading of the letter, was the potential of a rail loading facility near the south unit of the park. Is that right?
Yes, near.
Okay, Freiburg. And you realize that's not a matter that's before this commission.
Right.
Okay. And that was a matter that was before the Billings County
yes.
Board of County Commissioners. Is that correct?
Yes.
In a zoning matter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
there was a park representative at that zoning hearing. Is that correct?
Yes, there was.
Okay. One other question, or probably two other questions. Can you describe for us the difference between the park boundary and the administrative boundary?
I've had that question a couple of times today, and honestly, I cannot.
Okay.
I know it's for us. It's a tough management thing sometimes too, because it's in our legislative boundary, but the rules that we can enforce there are completely different.
Someone.
And I know that the superintendent and probably the law enforcement rangers could tell you more specifics than I can, but that's as best I can say.
Someone suggested to me that the area within the administrative boundary, but not within the boundary, was owned by private individuals. Is that accurate? Or
portions of it are.
Okay, but other portions are owned by the federal government?
Right.
Okay.
As best I know, yes.
That's all the questions I have.
Mr. Sagsby.
I don't have any questions.
Mr. Fawn.
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you for your testimony. So just to make sure the park is participating in the full NEPA process?
Yes.
And so you'll be going to, if they do have any meetings, the scoping or any of that, you'll be involved in all that all the way
right,
through?
Right, right. We, I'm not certain when Valerie initiated the contact with the BLM folks. They had a meeting in Dickinson within the last 2 weeks, and our Chief of Resource Management and our NEPA expert went to that in Dickinson, so we're with that process.
Just I guess it's a general knowledge question for me. So when the park participates in whatever it might be, is it mostly local folks from, you know, North Dakota, if you will, working here that participate, or do people from outside the region come in and then participate?
Depending on the nature of what's being addressed, it can be both. Typically, it's just the local officials from the, you know, the local Forest Service offices, the local BLM offices, and the park.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Commissioner Kramer.
I just have one curious question. How close are the closest producing wells or active wells to the park? Because your concern about view shed is, you know, sincere,
yep.
obviously. And I'm just wondering, how does production affect the park?
You know, it is mostly just a view shed issue. You know, the Elkhorn Ranch site, there are some wells that are, you know, within sight, within a mile from the Elkhorn Ranch site. There's some being presently drilled northeast of the north unit that are within about a mile and a half, but you can't see them unless you're up on top on the upper plains. But you know, the companies have been very good to work with us on that, everybody, to include painting the, you know, structures at the well sites, earth tone colors and stuff like that. So,
okay, I was. You do understand, and I think Mr. Bender alluded to this, but we actually will not have, don't have any siting authority over the rail facilities. Although they're has been interest expressed lately that we ought to. We don't.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, thank you for your testimony very much.
Mr. Clark.
I think this is sort of a process question about how the National Park Service, when it weighs its participation through the NEPA process as a collaborating agency, takes into account different factors. So I noticed that the Highway 85 itself actually runs right through the, mm-hmm. the park.
It does.
So oil trucks have an impact to a degree on the park, and a never-ending stream of oil trucks has an impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as it weighs pipelines versus oil trucks through 85, is that sort of thing taken into consideration as it weighs different options and how it approaches things like other infrastructure that may be close by, but that might alleviate other problems that are going on in the park right now?
It is. Okay. I think it's a common sense approach. You know, it's give and take. A pipeline, I think all of us at the park and as private citizens here know that if we have a pipeline, it's going to lessen the impacts from the oil trucks, and there's a spill risk with those too. So yeah, all of those things are considered with an open mind.
Sure. Yep. All right. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Bender.
Nothing further.
Mr. Sagsby.
Nothing further.
Mr. Fawn.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Heisen.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, please, Ms. Swenson.
Hello, my name is Jan Swenson.
And your residence address is?
I live at 801 North 10th Street in Bismarck, North Dakota.
Is that also your post office address?
It is.
And are you here on behalf of an organization, a group, or other entity?
I am.
And what is that
group? I'm executive director for the Badlands Conservation Alliance.
Ms. Swenson, as you have heard me ad nauseum advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years, or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Ms. Swenson, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you for letting me be here today to speak with you. I have a letter from the Badlands Conservation Alliance to the Public Service Commissioners that I would like entered as an exhibit.
Mr. Bender.
I don't have any objection.
Mr. Sagsby.
I guess my only question is, you wrote the letter?
I wrote the letter.
Okay. I have no objections.
You may, Exhibit 13 is received. You may proceed, Ms. Swenson.
Lucky number.
I'm sorry. Purely accidental.
Okay, I'm going to read the letter to you. There are some spots where there has been discussion that has already covered these things, but I'm going to read it to you anyway, okay? I'm submitting this testimony on behalf of the Badlands Conservation Alliance, a nonprofit organization focused on management and thoughtful protection of public lands and natural resources in western North Dakota. We have no economic gain in this arena, but rather a deep respect for North Dakota, her values, our communities, and what the landscape brings to us. We would like to point out that Theodore Roosevelt National Park makes up 1/5 of 1% of the land area of North Dakota. In three discrete units throughout the larger Little Missouri Valley, home to a North Dakota State Scenic River, the national park is surrounded by the 1.1 million acre Little Missouri National Grassland, which in itself makes up 2.4% of the land area of North Dakota. The Bakken Formation in North Dakota covers over 14,000 square miles, or 20% of the state. Additional oil-bearing formations, including Three Forks, Spearfish, Tyler, are under early development and will expand the oil patch in North Dakota well beyond the Bakken. Direct and indirect impacts on communities, both good and bad, are already extending over nearly half of the state. We live in a hugely transformative time. We have difficult and deeply consequential decisions to make. They are decisions not only for ourselves and our children, but for generations to come. BCA acknowledges the benefits to individuals, communities, our state, and our nation that come with oil development. We also recognize the need to be comprehensive and thoughtful in our planning. The proposal before the Commission today is not merely about a crude oil pipeline. It's not. It is about a decision that will or will not lead to irreversible industrialization of a travel corridor that runs the length of the Little Missouri National Grassland and connects the two largest units of Theodore Roosevelt National Park. These lands are held in trust not just for North Dakotans, but for the entire nation. BCA does not support any waiver of procedures or time schedules relating to this project and would assert that the corridor and route proposed by Bakken Pipeline LLC is contrary to the North Dakota Administrative Code that directs the work of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. Indeed, we find it contradictory to environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources. And here I turn to the Administrative Code, Chapter 6906.08.02, Transmission Facility Corridor and Route Criteria, and recognize I'm not a lawyer, okay? I'm a layperson here. I'm an advocate. And here, you know, we have touched in discussion about exclusion areas, but again, under A of exclusion areas, the proposed route currently runs through the administrative boundary of a north unit of Theodore Roosevelt National Park. Plain and simple, this is not acceptable. Furthermore, BCA asks that this exclusion area be delineated on all associated maps. Under D and E of that exclusion area, it includes wildlife species protection. And I just want to touch basically on a few things. We've discussed bighorn sheep, for instance, here. That the Sprague's pipit is a North Dakota level one species of concern. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has determined that the Sprague's pipit warrants protection under the Endangered Species Act and holds it as a candidate species until a listing proposal is prepared. Further habitat fragmentation and disturbance will exacerbate listing. The service has stated that the pipit requires large patches of prairie for nesting and that the impact of an object or disturbance is much larger than the footprint. Excuse me. Point being made here is that with all the fragmentation that's going on in western North Dakota, we're exacerbating the problem with possible listing. We have to think about that when we do our planning, because does North Dakota want to have that responsibility? Similarly, scientific research is showing that golden eagles, as protected by the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, are dependent upon their larger territorial bounds and not merely their annual nesting sites, which vary from year to year. 1 year a golden eagle will pick this house to live in, and the next year he might pick a different house to live in. And again, the North Dakota Game and Fish report impacts of oil and gas development on select North Dakota natural resources from May of 2011, and I quote, "It should be incumbent upon all North Dakotans that the jobs and revenue associated with the oil and gas industry could come with a cost, namely diminished hunting and outdoor recreational opportunities through the loss of primary habitat due to direct and indirect effects of oil and gas development that sustains the wildlife populations that are so highly valued by the state's citizens. And then returning to avoidance areas, which we have certainly talked about this morning. The administrative code says that the following geographical areas shall not be considered in the routing of a transmission facility unless the applicant shows that under the circumstances there is no reasonable alternative. Economic considerations alone shall not justify approval of these areas. One of those avoidance areas is the Little Missouri National Grassland, which we have discussed. And BCA would request that those lands, again, be delineated on all associated maps as avoidance areas. And we have touched on I'm really sorry. Water's not doing it.
Would it be helpful to take a bit more of a recess, Ms. Swenson?
No.
Okay. Fire away.
We've discussed the Badlands breaks of the Little Missouri, the Missouri River, and the larger Little Missouri National Grassland. And certainly in the last few years, they have demonstrated their geological instability. Returning to the opening language of avoidance areas and national grasslands, wow, thank you. It says, national grasslands shall not be considered in the routing of a transmission facility. A key word here is the unless that follows. BCA would insist that the discussion of Bakken Link Pipeline LLC in its original corridor certificate route permit application of June 2011 puts forward at least two alternative routes that have not been given full or reasonable consideration. And I will let you read those two to yourself. one being that follows the Bridger Pipeline route, and the second one that is closer to the Northern Border Pipeline Company. But both of those are listed as worthy of consideration. The existence of these two potential routes nullifies the unless and requires that this proposed route through and adjacent to the Little Missouri National Grassland be withdrawn. Additionally, the introductory paragraph for NDAC 69060802 states, exclusion and avoidance areas may be located within a corridor, but at no given point shall such an area or areas encompass more than 50% of the corridor width, unless there is no reasonable alternative. We have already determined that reasonable alternatives exist. A serious default also presents itself in that a minimum of three areas exhibit over 50% and up to 100% of the corridor composed of avoidance areas. We cite, for your convenience, Appendix B of the September 22, 2011 amendment to application, Figure 2, Figure 7, Figure 8, being up by the crossing of Lake Sakakawea, close to Theodore Roosevelt National Park North Unit, and then again down as 85 approaches the junction with 200. This is contrary to the administrative code. It is BCA's understanding that the Bureau of Land Management is the lead federal agency in conducting an environmental assessment on this proposed Bakken Link pipeline. We encourage their inclusion of a full range of alternatives that address the concerns BCA states above. We also welcome the opportunity for a broader public process on a project as significant in cumulative impacts as this proposed project. Already, this proposed pipeline is tied to a proposed rail transport facility in Freiburg that threatens the south unit of Theodore Roosevelt National Park. To be located on a northern slope that faces the park boundary a mile and a half distant, impacts to the park will certainly include viewshed impingement, noise, and light pollution, and increased commercial traffic and dust. Our national park and national grasslands are being swallowed up by an industrializing landscape. It is our duty as North Dakota citizens to speak for those national public lands with which we have been entrusted. If we want a remnant of our home landscape to remain, we must act. There are natural resources of even more enduring value than what we dig, drill, or otherwise develop. It is those natural resources for which we speak. Badlands Conservation Alliance thanks you for this opportunity to comment.
Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't have any questions.
Mr. Sagsveen.
On page two, you identified the Sprague's pipit as a candidate species for a protection under the Endangered Species Act. What is that? Can you clarify what that means?
It means that it is on its way up to being an endangered and threatened. It qualifies. In fact, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had said if they weren't so busy doing other species that they consider of even higher concern, the Sprague's pipit would be on that list.
But as far as you know, it's not considered an endangered species by the Fish and Wildlife.
It's on the candidate list, which means it's like if you're waiting at the door in a line, you're on the outside. It's on the outside.
I don't have any additional questions.
Mr. Fawn.
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you for testifying. On page three of your testimony, about maybe a third of the way down, there's a paragraph that begins, "We have already determined that reasonable alternatives exist." I may have missed it in the testimony, but does it outline in the testimony the alternatives that you've determined exist?
I'm suggesting that there are other alternatives out there.
Okay.
You know, our concern is not with a pipeline. Pipeline, good. Pipeline decreases.
Right.
Bakken pipeline is even good. I'm not picking on this company. We're just saying that track along 85 needs to be reconsidered because we don't have a lot of public land and because we will have less and less other land. We just need to be thoughtful about what it is we're doing because we won't just bury a pipeline. There will be so many things that come with that pipeline.
Sure. You're here for earlier testimony today. Did you hear the information that was provided about the Corps preferring this route apparently with regard to utilizing existing routes that cross the Kakawea? And I'm wondering from a BCA perspective how you weigh that? Do you see that as an advantageous thing to use an existing route, or would you prefer it be somewhere else? And I'm not trying to be provocative or any, or argumentative. I'm just wondering how to weigh, you know,
we have a lot of concern about crossing the big lake at all.
Right.
But you know, it's happened before and it's going to happen again. You know, if the Corps knows, I'm not an engineer, I'm not qualified to say. If the Corps thinks that's an okay and good thing, I'll read what they have to say when the EA comes out.
Okay. And I guess in that same vein, being the commission is always weighing alternatives as compared to what is kind of the question that we're always asking. Do you have any thoughts of regarding whether it's better or worse to parallel existing infrastructure? For example, US 85 is there, and you'd mentioned that you'd prefer that it be, I think, probably further east, or at least not crossing National or US Forest Service land.
It's often a case by case sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that has routinely been the thing to do, you know, to run utilities and roads and all such in the same corridor, and it's made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that automatically says that a pipeline or should run down that same corridor, because we're dealing with a whole different circumstance than we have ever dealt with before. You know, industrialization on a level that we have no experience in. I think we need to rethink all those sorts of things. And I'm not sure that any of us, private, organizational, state, are doing a great job of that yet. And I think we better start, or we're going to have some regrets.
So, and maybe this gets to just a final question I'd had. One of the paragraphs that I highlighted in your testimony was with regard to the commission, the proposal today is not merely, I'm quoting the testimony, about a crude oil pipeline. It is a decision that will or will not lead to irreversible industrialization of a travel corridor that runs the entire length, so on and so forth. So is that point that you're making getting to just a general concern about the pace of development, generally speaking, in oil and gas in the western part of the state, and to the degree that this project is a part of that it causes you concern, or that it might cause additional activity? I'm trying to sort of delineate the point that you're
You want me to hone in?
Yeah, hone in, if you will.
BCA is concerned about the speed with which oil and gas development is going on in North Dakota and whether or not it is as thoughtful as it could be. This is very specific to that route that has been marked out, that runs right along the border of our national parks and our Little Missouri National Grasslands. And it's, you know, 95% of the Little Missouri National Grasslands is open to oil and gas. You know, it's multiple use land. I get that. We get that. But there's still a certain level of respect owed for recreational, wildlife, heritage values. And when we have an oil well, at least one on every square mile out there in western North Dakota, where are the mule deer going to be? You know, where are the bighorn sheep going to be? You know, if we're not thoughtful and at least pick some spots where we're going to preserve some of those traditional values, it will all be gone. It will all be gone. And what is North Dakota to a good lot of us in that outdoor experience, and even if you don't experience, just knowing, that's a big part of being a North Dakotan. And if we don't make some thoughtful decisions, it'll be gone. And to me, moving that pipeline a little somewhere else, and I'm not an engineer, so I can't say, but a little east, let's go a little east and give that stretch of Badlands a break. You know, I read in the paper, Lynn Helm said recently, you know, it's not just the landman knocks on your door, you sign the paper, and then it's how did he put it? Eight evil twins come and knock. You know, it's not just the pipeline. It's what comes with the pipeline. And that's what we'll have. That's what we'll have. Right next to all our public land. It diminishes, I'm a North Dakotan, it diminishes it greatly to me. We don't have a lot of places where we, the public, can say, let's keep a little. But we do there, because it's public land.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Calk.
Jan, thank you for your testimony. It takes a lot of courage to testify, and that's good. We like to hear the concerns. But I want to get right to the point. You heard the discussion earlier, I'm sure, about participating in the NEPA process. Is your organization participating in the NEPA process?
We will. I have talked to a couple of federal agencies because I do have concerns. You know, and I wasn't so we weren't so concerned about this project until the rail facility came in down by Freiburg. And you say, we don't have any control there? You know, we don't somehow.
Well, that's why I bring up the NEPA process.
We have to bring this all together.
The NEPA process is a cumulative effects process that my frustration with folks in the NEPA process is they didn't get involved till the end. So I'm glad you're here today to express your concerns, but I would urge you to get involved in the NEPA process right now. And then I guess the next question is that when the process comes through, there'll be an outcome. And that's the part that it's challenging, where if sometimes it seems that folks already have made the decision that it needs to move before the process is completed. And so I hear what you're saying, but I also hear that we want to make the best decision, but it's get all the concerns on the table early. But then if the process turns out to be a finding of no significant impact is reached, and you participated in the NEPA, would you accept that?
would we hire a lawyer?
No,
I can't answer that. I work for a board.
But I think that's the concern that I have, though. We want to develop the state wisely. We want to get the concerns on the table early, but we just had a lady in this building. Her daughter was killed in Highway 85 south of town. And so there's a major safety concern for that corridor. And like it or not, the corridor is there. And so I hear your concerns, but I want to get all the concerns on the table and address them to the best we can for the whole state and then make the best decision accordingly. And that's why it's just very candid discussion.
And
so I guess my point is I just want to encourage you to
maybe that's a little unfair to bring tragedy into.
But it's reality.
It is reality. I know reality. I know tragedy.
I guess my point, ma'am, is I just wish I want you to participate in the NEPA process as much as you can, and we'll all work through this together, because, I mean, I think you were in the room and you heard my concern about the crossing Garrison and the spill response plan. There's issues to work through. But we need to get all the cards on the table early and then work through them to get to the best decision for the state. So I just thanks for coming and just encourage you to get your organization involved in the NEPA process, and we'll get to the best decision. So.
Absolutely. We'll be involved. Thanks.
Further questions? Commissioner Kramer.
I do have a question about your organization in general. Describe it a little bit. I mean, how many members are there? How does one become a member?
We have 135 members.
Okay.
We describe ourselves as a small but feisty Western North Dakota organization.
Well, if they're all like you, I would concur.
We've been around since 1999. We were incorporated in 2001. Came into being during the planning process on the Dakota Prairie Grasslands Land and Management, when our congressional delegation at that time said there were no conservationists in Western North Dakota. And our founding members said, yes, there are. How's that?
That's good. Thank you.
If you want a membership brochure, I got one.
Okay. Thank you.
You have to recuse himself.
Yeah, right. Thank you for your work.
Yep.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Binder.
No questions.
Mr. Sagsby.
No questions.
Mr. Fawn. Thank you very much, Ms.
Yep,
Swenson.
Thank you.
You didn't have to go to law school. Now, is there anyone else present who wishes to speak to the commission? For, against, in between, whatever. And is there anyone else present who wishes to speak to the commission? If not, Mr. Binder, anything further for the commission?
Nothing further, and we'll waive our opportunity for a closing remark.
Mr. Sagsveen, anything further for the commission?
No further questions, Your Honor.
Closing comments from the commission. Commission Chairman Tony Clark.
Just thank you all for being here. These are the opportunity that we have for the commission to get out in the field and hear concerns from landowners and other interested persons and other interested parties. And it's the one opportunity that we have to do it. So we gather a lot of information at these, and they're very helpful in making our decision. This particular project is a pipeline project, is in Commissioner Kramer's portfolio, and maybe he can give you an update on the timeline that we may be having. But we don't make decisions today. There are a number of bits of information, as you heard, that we'll be receiving as late filed exhibits. We'll take those in the due course of time, and then at a certain point we'll hold work sessions, and after work sessions then at some point the commission will make a decision. But your participation in this process has helped make all of that possible, so we thank you. We thank you for that.
Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you, and I too want to thank everybody for their participation, their attention and patience, and it was very thoughtful to wait for the lunch hour to be gone before we go over and have some buffalo chili at over at, and I won't say Outlaws, but Outlaws, I guess. This is interesting. We've had a lot of hearings in this room, a lot of hearings in this town outside of this room, on other rooms. This is by far the toughest one. I would say this, though, that with regard to the waiver of timelines and procedures, while it may seem like a rush job, this hasn't been a rush job. And frankly, one of the thoughts that occurred to me during the presentation was that I'm grateful that we have all winter. Many times we'll be sitting here and the company will have bulldozers ready to get started so that we can get an order out in a special meeting as quickly as possible with a proposed order. And we do that. We try to accommodate that when that's the right thing to do. To get trucks off the road, to make people safer, to take advantage of a good construction season as opposed to the difficulties of a winter construction season. In this case, we have till the spring. And furthermore, with the late filed exhibits, and some of them are pretty important exhibits, we need that time anyway. The other thing I would say to folks that are concerned about the waiver of the timeline is that no order, especially an order that is involved as this one is with federal agencies, no order is without contingencies. And so while we're the final decision maker on the route permit and this certificate of corridor compatibility, even those orders are contingent upon all the federal agencies that have authority signing off as well. So, I'm not overly concerned about that part of, while I appreciate the testimony related to it, I think we're going to be fine with regard to timeline. Because there is a sense of urgency as well in getting, in making our highways safer, in helping people be safer, to move the product along and get it to market, and frankly, even to allow the people that have this wonderful resource underneath their land, and they own those minerals, and they're entitled as well to some opportunity. So we put it all in balance at the end of the day. We consider every concern and every bit of the evidence that's been presented today and previously and will be presented later. And with regard to timeline, this won't be one where we have a special meeting next week to rush it through. I'm quite certain, councilors, right? And so we'll keep you in the loop as we move forward. Thank you all.
Commissioner Kalk.
Well, just thank you all very much for taking the time today. As the last commissioner to talk before lunch, I'll try to keep it specific, I guess. But this whole process that was set up by legislators long before I ever probably was even born, that the hearing process, I think, is a very good thing, because we come out to the communities most effective and we hear the concerns. And I appreciate the testimony that Jan just delivered, and I appreciate the testimony that the other folks did. But it does bring out an interesting scenario in the state right now, that we've got so much going on. And how do we look at it as a state? We go to wind hearings, and you'll get folks that are very much pro-wind, but then there's also the concerns that go with siting 1,000 wind turbines in the middle of a flyway. But you need the energy. And also there's the jobs component that goes with it. You've got troops overseas fighting wars that actually tie into the more energy we develop back home. But it doesn't mean you waive things going on in the process. And so I think that the best thing that we can do, all of us involved, is just do that, stay involved. Because the process, I really believe in the process, and that's why I was harping on the NEPA thing a little bit, that I think if you can get reasonable people to the table and they talk about their concerns, you'll come out with the best possible outcome. I think that's what this hearing does, is that, and even that's why there's three commissioners, because it'd be very challenging for one commissioner to go back and look at all the information. We go through our work sessions, we all three sit down, and it's very good, because we usually agree on some amount of things, but there's always a lot that we have to sit through and we didn't consider it, and we don't talk except when we get inside those work sessions. So I anticipate this to be a very good one. The last thing I'll talk about is Kevin has the portfolio and actually citing the pipeline, and I have the portfolio on pipeline safety. And that's why, to me, the biggest concern I always have is safety, whether it's spill response, whether it's people that aren't calling before they dig. But as we develop more infrastructure in the states, we've had fatalities on pipeline safety as well. So that's where Pat's discussion today was, making sure we exactly know where the pipeline is at in the ground, because we're finding that in some pipelines that were put in the state years ago, we don't exactly know where they're at. And so that poses a separate problem. So this, I think, was a very thorough hearing. I look forward to getting all the late exhibits, getting the work session, and I look forward to the process continuing, whether it's NEPA and our own work with the PHMSA. So just thank you all very much for being here today. And thank the sound man, because you've got the longest drive home.
Thank you very much, commissioners. Mr. Bender, anything further for the record?
Nothing further.
Mr. Sagsveen, anything further for the record?
No, Your Honor.
Accordingly, the hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-10-218 is closed, subject to the filing of late filed exhibits. Thank you, counsel.